We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
The McNeil and Parkins Show.
670 The Score in Chicago. Shout out to you guys, McNeil and Parkins. Love you guys.
Afternoons on The Score. And now, time for a McNeil and Parkins Bears Draft Memory.
With the 73rd pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select David Montgomery, running back, Iowa State.
You know, I think this is the one piece they're missing that they had last year. Last year was Jordan Howard. He was the physical bruiser.
He runs with a bit of anger. Now out of the I formation, a Le'Veon Bell kind of hesitation, and then utilizing that speed to the outside. 25-yard run for David Montgomery.
That was your McNeil and Parkins Bears Draft Memory on 670 The Score. The McNeil and Parkins Show, afternoons on The Score.
Where the Hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. It's Mack and Parkins on The Score. The NFL draft tonight. The Bears don't have a pick. And I know it's popular. Like, anything could happen. Ryan Pace loves to trade. He could trade up. You're not traded up into the first round. He does not have enough to get into the first round. He'd have to give up next year's first round pick to get into the first round. I will guarantee you that the first round will come and go tonight without the Bears making a selection, Dan McNeil.
Yeah, and Tariq Cohen wouldn't sweeten the pot enough to get somebody to get him into the first round, unless it's Hub Arkush doing that. And we'll get back to Hub and your his message to us on Twitter a little bit later on. I like that that's taking on a life all of its own.
Yes, Hub Arkush shoots down my football opinions. It's a tradition unlike any other. But I'm excited to talk to this guy. He's the lead draft analyst at Pro Football Focus. They've gotten into the college game recently. He's been following college football as it relates to the NFL draft for that great website for a while now. You can follow him on Twitter at PFF_Mike. He's with us by way of the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Mike Renner on The Score. Mike, thanks so much for the time. Happy draft day.
Thanks for having me, fellas. I'm pretty excited here, I'll just say.
Pretty excited for the draft or to be on with us?
Both. Hey, I've been listening to Score since I was a kid growing up in Milwaukee, so yeah.
I figured as a Notre Dame alum, so let's start with some of the Notre Dame guys. Some Bears fans seem to love the idea of Cole Kmet, maybe the top tight end in the draft, at 43 or 50 to the Bears. Would that be an overselection?
I think so. I think he's still very much a projection at this point. You fall in love with what he could become, not necessarily what he is right now. He's kind of the best of a bad group in terms of he offers like the full, complete tight end skill set of inline blocking, size, ball skills, but he's not like dynamic after the catch. He's kind of like a bruiser and a lumberer around the football field. So as a Notre Dame fan, like I was kind of surprised when he declared for the draft. I just don't see him being that sort of dynamic tight end that is the guy or the true difference makers today, the Kittles, the, you know, Kelseys of the world.
What about Chase Claypool from Notre Dame? Is he in that range or also too high?
I think he's intriguing. And yeah, he's probably more in that range, I'd say, because he showed up 238 at the combine, played at Notre Dame in the 220s, and he still tested out like a freak athlete. And you saw him every year of his Notre Dame career, just improved by leaps and bounds. Barely played. I mean, he played out in Canada in high school, was not getting, I'd say, good coaching, I'm just going to venture to say. And so with how much he's improved over his Notre Dame career, with those sort of physical tools, I'd be much more willing to take a chance on a guy like that because he has that sort of athleticism and after the catch ability that, like I said, can win at tight end.
Mike, I watched several Notre Dame players perform very, very well in the Senior Bowl. I also saw some kids from Iowa, and that tackle from Iowa who is expected to be – he is going to be the first tackle chosen tonight, right? Tell us what you like about him.
I can't make heads or tails of who's going to be the first tackle chosen. It's going to be Dave Gettleman most likely making that decision. That's why I can't, you know, get inside his mind. No one knows what he's thinking. So there's a good shot it is Tristan Wirfs, though. He is a freak of nature, you know, by every sense of the word. The first ever true freshman to start an offensive tackle for Kirk Ferentz at Iowa. You know, they had Marshall Yanda, Brian Bulaga. None of them started as true freshmen. So he really is just a people mover in the run game. You can't go through him. You got to go around this guy. I think this tackle class is special. To me, he's just, I'd say, very, I don't want to say sure thing. I don't want to put that on anybody. But with how much we've seen him improve with his physical tools, I think you're just going to get a very solid tackle for years to come.
I want the Bears to draft a tackle at 43 unless they move it, Mike. And I'm holding out hope Josh Jones of Houston will still be there. But I'm seeing a lot of mocks where he's probably late first. Do you think there's any chance he slips to 43?
That would floor me because he's the 14th player on the PFF draft board. This guy allowed two pressures all year long last year at Houston. And, yeah, I get that the competition's not great at Houston, but he's not losing either. Like, that's worth something in and of itself. And he looked great at the Senior Bowl as well. So I don't think he's making it to 43, unfortunately, but I do love him. If he does fall to 43, I think you sprint that card in there if you're the Bears.
Second quarterback taken tonight is who?
I think it's Tua. I have a theory that I've convinced myself into that it's the L.A. Chargers are going to give up a good deal of picks to either number two or number three to go get Tua because they were the laughingstock of the NFL the last 2 years, not being able to sell out an MLS stadium. They're moving to a new stadium. They just released new jerseys. They need to sell those jerseys and fill some seats. Tua Tagovailoa does that. Justin Herbert, to me, does not do that. Tyrod Taylor does not do that. So I'm convinced that that's kind of their plan of attack here in this draft tonight.
No concerns with the hip, huh?
I mean, I'd be terrified of that hip and the injury history at this point, but I'm just projecting what the Chargers might do here.
We're talking to Mike Renner, lead NFL draft analyst over at Pro Football Focus. There seems to be some last 24, 48 hours reporting that NFL teams do not like Isaiah Simmons, the do-everything defensive player from Clemson, as much as the media seems to like Isaiah Simmons, saying they don't know what position to slot him in at. Where do you have him ranked on your board?
He's seventh on the PFF draft board because he can do a lot of different things, because he is a rare athlete, because like he is, in my estimation, the sort of answer for modern defenses to these modern offenses that have a lot of motion, that change formations play to play, that, you know, will throw four wide receivers at you, will do a lot of different things. You don't have to sub when you have Isaiah Simmons. He can go from linebacker one play to cornerback the next to safety. But at the same time, that takes a creative defensive coordinator. A lot of DCs in the NFL want their scheme and guys they can plug into their scheme. That's not necessarily going to be Isaiah Simmons. For a lot of defenses in the league, he's just a weak side linebacker. And we never really – the interesting thing was he's listed as a linebacker in the draft. That was probably the position he played the least at Clemson. He was mainly a safety and slot cornerback for them. So at 238 pounds, though, I don't think he's going to be either of those in the NFL. So I think you can see if Derwin James, a similar type of player, fell all the way to 17, I think you could see a similar fall from Isaiah Simmons.
And I saw PFF has the Saints moving up and likely taking him.
I just think the Saints are – I mean, three straight drafts before this, they've traded away a future pick, first rounder once, second rounder twice, to go up and get a guy. I just think they have a window with Breeze right now and that this feels like a perfect time to do it again. I don't think they're going to get the guy they necessarily have their eye on at 24. And if Isaiah Simmons does start to fall, you'd be hard-pressed to see Mickey Loomis without his finger on the trigger there ready to make that trade.
Mike, is this a better tackle draft or receiver draft?
That's a great question. I will say it's a more the tackle class is more of a rarity. I think there's four guys in this tackle class that can step in. There are four guys in this tackle class that are all true juniors, all have freakish athletic traits, and all look like day one starters in the NFL. That just doesn't happen. You're lucky to get one of those guys in a year. After that, it's kind of like hit and miss. After the tackle class really falls apart, I want one of those guys at the top. But the wide receiver class, I think this is kind of almost going to be the new norm with wide receivers, where you have just deep groups because guys are playing 7-on-7 and everyone wants to play offense nowadays. So I think you're kind of seeing the start of something that's going to be the norm, is a lot of wide receiver talent coming into the NFL. So I'll say the tackle class is more is a better class in terms of comparatively to years past and years in the future.
How many running backs do you see going in tonight's first round?
Man, so I have none in my mock draft. Just because the way I see this running back class, there are like six guys at the top who I don't want to say are interchangeable, but they're so close in terms of the talent they have that you would be crazy to me to take one in the first round and not just wait and take whichever one falls to you in the second round that you like. We preach here at PFF the value of running backs and how they don't really move the needle. It's the blocking in front of them that matters for the run game. If you are going to draft a running back, you want one that can actually catch out of the backfield. So I hope it's going to be zero. I could see one sneaking into the back if it's someone like DeAndre Swift.
Mike Renner is the lead NFL draft analyst over at Pro Football Focus. Back to the receivers, there's such a debate about these top names. If you could have one guy and say 3 years from now he's going to be the best of this class, who are you saying?
I'm saying Jerry Jeudy. I've said it since his sophomore year when he won the Biletnikoff Award, when he was the better receiver than anyone who came out last year. He didn't have followed up with another monster year, but they had an unbelievable amount of talent around him, that wide receiver at Alabama. So I don't think a lot of that was his fault. The guy runs routes differently than any college wide receiver I've seen in a while. He just has a nuance to him, a way of setting up defensive backs that I don't think he can teach. So while he's not, Henry Ruggs physically, he's not running a 4.2, I think he's plenty fast to be a deep threat in the NFL. And I just think he is about as solid a wide receiver prospect as I've seen in the past handful of years.
I'm not Jewish, though.
Yeah, I like him because he said he's not Jewish, Jerry Jeudy. I'm a fan.
Is there an NFL player who is a good comp for Jerry?
So, interestingly enough, he kind of reminds me of Calvin Ridley coming out. Same school, Alabama there. But he's just a little, I'd say a little more explosive, a little better with the ball in his hands, and just, I think, more complete all-around receiver. And just like the way he I keep saying the way he moves, it's tough to describe, but the way he moves is just, it's different from any wide receiver I've seen.
If there are four first-round quarterbacks, and then there's that second group, Jalen Hurts, Eason, Jake Fromm, right, and anyone else that you would include in it, who is the best of the second group of quarterbacks?
That's tough. A couple of those guys are really close on our board, Jake Fromm and Jalen Hurts. Neither of them we see until like third round really being values. But I'll lean Jalen Hurts. I think he has a higher floor in the NFL just because we've seen what that running element can do to opposing defenses. Like, he's dynamic enough. He could play running back on his own if he really wanted to. He ran like a 4.59 at the combine, and he's like 220 plus pounds. So he's dynamic enough that you have to account for him in the run game. And when you have to account for him in the run game, you get simpler coverage looks in the NFL. A lot of it changes the way you have to play defense. And then I think we've seen over the course of his career, protects the football well, and just the way he's improved. His freshman year at Alabama, he was awful. Like, he looked like he was the laughingstock of college football with the way he threw the ball. By his senior year, he was lighting up defenses in the Big 12. So I think the upward trajectory, the improvement, the personality sort of stuff is all in favor there, that I could see him becoming maybe not a high-level NFL quarterback, but a starter leading a successful offense with his legs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, what don't people like about Jalen Hurts? Because to me, he's clearly the answer of that second-tier guys, and I haven't studied them all like you have, but like Jake Fromm played in big games, but he's slow. He in the NFL, that guy, he has to be a pocket passer, whereas Jalen Hurts, he had 1,200 rushing yards and 20 rushing touchdowns last year. Like you said, he ran a sub 4.640. Jalen Hurts, he played in a national championship, SEC Player of the Year, Big 12 Newcomer of the Year. He feels like if he would have just been at Oklahoma's entire career or been at Alabama's entire career and not had some controversy within his college career, it feels to me like his production would have had him as a first-round talent. So I don't know what I'm missing with him.
Yeah, so he's a little slow to process. Like, he had the longest time to throw in the nation this past season by, like, almost over a quarter of a second. Like, he just holds on to the ball. And he was afforded that at Oklahoma with that offensive line. Didn't have to make quick decisions. And so that's part of it. It's consistently late to some throws. And then it's just downfield accuracy. You know, 15-plus yards down the field is shaky, right? Shaky at best. He really doesn't make those sort of special throws, quote-unquote, that you fall in love with, that guys like Jordan Love in this class, Justin Herbert, they make. They have those, a ton of those on their tape. So didn't see a lot from Jalen Hurts. That's why people are probably down on him. But, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about him versus Jake Fromm, like Fromm, my comp for Fromm in the draft guide was Chase Daniel. That's what Fromm's kind of upshot is. He's your game manager that comes in and maybe wins you a couple games as a backup.
Since you took it to the Bears, or a former Bear in Chase Daniel, rewind for us a couple of years. I don't expect you to admit to being as wrong as Ryan Pace was about Mitch Trubisky, but what did you think of Trubisky coming out of college, and what has not materialized in his game that you were expecting him to be better at?
That year I was more wrong about Watson and Mahomes. I just said I don't really want to take any of these guys highly, and obviously those two have proved me wrong. Trubisky, I think it kind of proved me right in that regard. He's just not been great, but that's what you kind of worry about with those one-year guys. And I loved his weird thing was he was accurate in college. Like at North Carolina, he was fairly accurate. Our ball charting and that sort of stuff said that he had that in his game. Hasn't been the case in the NFL, but you worry about one-year guys, and he has some games on his tape. I'm trying to think of the game that really was just awful that year, where he had like less than 100 passing yards. That should have been kind of like, it was like one of the best defenses he faced. He just completely fell apart. That should have been kind of a bigger red flag in retrospect. But, yeah, I still consider him a first-rounder, still consider Mahomes and Watson first-rounders, but just didn't think, you know, top 10 was where I wanted to be taking any of those guys.
Who is the best player in this draft outside of the top 10?
Gosh, that's tough. Outside of the top 10. So, I think – God, it put me on the spot here. I'm racking my brain to think about the PFF draft board. I think Javon Kinlaw probably goes outside the top 10 this year's draft, the South Carolina defensive tackle, because I think there's a run on offensive tackles and maybe some wide receivers go in the top 10. So I think Javon Kinlaw, South Carolina defensive tackle, but to me, he reminds me of Chris Jones coming out where he didn't have a lot of pass rushing moves, you know, maybe had one or two, but those moves he executed at a really high level. You just tell you, like, he hadn't been coached to do much more than, like, a couple things. And when he did them, though, threw guys to the side, has enough quickness, like, rare athleticism at a guy 6'6", 315 pounds that you don't see every day. And so I think Derek Brown probably is going to go before him. Like I said, a lot of off tackles are going to go before him. And we're going to be thinking, you know, how Javon Kinlaw slipped to 16 when he's a wrecking ball in the NFL in a couple of years.
Mike Renner, lead NFL draft analyst at Pro Football Focus. Enjoy the draft. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks, Mike.
For sure, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
That's Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus.
Do you know he was on The Bachelor years ago?
The Bachelorette, yes.
The Bachelorette, yeah. Yeah, he was a contestant in 2014. He got knocked out in week 3.
He's a good-looking dude.
He is handsome.
Yeah.
Pretty, yeah. Though.
Yeah, for that show.
Pretty, yeah.
Yeah, he looks like he should be on that show.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I didn't want to talk to him about it because it's...
I was waiting for you to bring it up. Steph's a fan of the show, right?
Steph is a fan of the show.
Don't you get subjected to that program way more than you would prefer to?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's awful. It is... I have questions. I mean, I could ask him about, like, the producers clearly coaching them up for answers and the scripted storyline and how they give roses to people who the people clearly don't like just to create drama and tension within the house. Trust me, I have Bachelorette takes that I could have run by Mike Renner. But, Mac, it is draft day.
Well, it is draft day.
Yeah.
So it just didn't feel right.
Let's talk about the draft.
Maybe we bring back Mike Renner in like a week or two for score stories, and I just pepper him with Bachelorette questions.
We could do that, or maybe we find Jeremy Renner and talk to him about
right. Or not.
He might have time on his hands, you don't know.
Oh, Jeremy Renner? Yeah, I would take Jeremy Renner over Mike Renner, but I'm saying or not to my idea of Bachelorette score stories. I'm sure we could probably do better. I hope. It's just a spectacularly terrible show. You mentioned the COVIDiot of the Week nominee, and I know you've got some questions for us Bears draft-wise. We can get into that coming up. Dave Wannstedt at 4:30. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Coronavirus! Coronavirus!
This scam called the coronavirus.
Whoa.
Just like the swine flu, the bird flu, and all this other crap.
Pandemic!
The McNeil and Parkins COVIDiot.
Idiot.
It's a stacked field for COVIDiot of the week. You've got to beat the Las Vegas mayor. She is the leader in the clubhouse. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including first responders and emergency personnel. Thank you for helping keep us safe. Mac, I know your COVIDiot of the week has an NFL draft spin. What is your nominee?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, just about 3 miles south of where I'm broadcasting from right now in my home in Hooterville. I hope Yurko, my former partner, is busy disinfecting all of the high-touch areas in his home because Yurko has decided to have a draft party tonight. And
It is draft day.
That's what the good kid believes is the right thing to do. And I popped over today for a few minutes when we were in a break on our station, and his partner Carmen DeFalco said, "I'm sure you'll be 6 feet away." And there's a long pause, and Yerk says, "I live my life differently than other people, kid." And Carmen said, "Yes, some might call it recklessly." And Yerk says, "Well, some might call it recklessly. Some might say it's more intelligently. It's what I do." So anyway, for his reluctance.
Who are the people that would say it's more intelligently? Who are these people?
I'd love to know that, right? Yeah. Name one person who thought that's living intelligently by getting together and flipping the middle finger at the virus. He's having 6 buds over tonight, so, wrong idea, and certainly not very responsible to be on a microphone testing that sort of thing. So shame on you, good kid. I always will love you, but that was bad, and you are my COVIDiot nominee of the day.
Okay, that's a strong, the draft party.
Parties. What are you
doing?
Doesn't
seem necessary.
What are you doing? The Bears don't even have a pick.
I mean, how many people are coming to this draft party?
Yeah. Go play golf. It's warm enough to play golf. He's in Indiana. There are, you know, there are a few restrictions here in Indiana, but you can go out and play golf. That's a social thing to do. You don't have to have people come into your house. Six people. He got six guys coming over tonight.
For the first time in 51 years, Chi-Town is draft town.
Yeah, we were draft town a few years ago. I was thinking today, because, you know, I got a handful of drawers I want to open up here in just a little bit based on our teams, our Bears history of the failures in the first round. First round floppage. We don't have a chance to see them flop tonight because they don't have a pick after the Mac trade. But I wonder how few cities, I'm sure it's common, I know it's common in Detroit, and there are cities where the history of drafting players is a bad history. There probably only are how many teams where fans don't regularly use their team's draft history as a punchline? You'd have Pittsburgh, you'd have New England, the Cowboys.
Seattle's been pretty good.
Yeah, they have been pretty good. Yes.
Seattle, Baltimore, those have been pretty good. But, yeah, I mean, two-thirds of the league, absolutely. And, I mean, honestly, the majority of the league, every team has misses, right? Bill Belichick and the Patriots don't have a ton of recent draft hits, if you actually look at it. But they're also always trading down because they're more interested in stockpiling players who they can coach up and not have to pay them a bunch of money, as opposed to investing in guys at the top of the draft and having fewer players. So they just have a different strategy.
Texter says the Ravens are another one, and I'm sure that's the case. And I will ask you guys to take for your consideration, maybe since in the modern era, let's say 1985 on, let's pick 85, the great year. That's when NFL history really started, right?
The Bears'
worst number one picks. And don't give me Cade McNown because he at least played in the league for a few years. There are some staggeringly terrible picks made by every team in the league, and the Bears are not alone. And when we jump in the drawer, we'll go over a couple of them. But there's one guy to me who stands out as the guy who probably should be considered since 85 the clubhouse leader in terms of lack of productivity in a Bears uniform.
Wow. One guy as the worst.
Who would you say is off top of your head? Who is their worst number one pick in your lifetime? This works out well for you. It started in 85. That's when we're starting this. Your lifetime. That's what matters.
So, you know, I think Curtis Enos. I think David Terrell. I think...
I always go with Stan Thomas because didn't Ditka call him a piece of crap or something like that?
Ditka did give him an acronym, yes. Stan Thomas certainly is right there. He probably would be my bronze medalist in this. He was drafted in 91 by Bill Tobin, who was pretty good as a Bears personnel director. They thought
Shea
McClellan. Shea McClellan's it, but Stan Thomas started seven games in his 2 years in a Bears uniform. I mean, he was only
that's
in
terrible.
The league
only
for
two
4 years.
Yeah, that's weird. I'm looking at his bio now, 2 years with the Bears and then 2 years with the Oilers. Why
the
only
Houston Oilers,
2 years? Like, that's for a number one pick?
Yeah. He's the 22nd player chosen in the 91 draft, and he starts seven games in two seasons with the Bears, and they release him, and he winds up fizzling out in Houston. So he would be up there. But I think the guy who is head and shoulders above the rest is Michael Haynes out of Penn State, one of two first-round picks the Bears had in 0-3. They took him 14th in the first round. He was the kid who was...
the Grossman draft.
Grossman was drafted, I think, eight slots later, yes. They could have taken Terrell Suggs, but they didn't like his 40 time, so they go out and they get Michael Haynes. And he winds up starting in very few games during his just several years in a Bears uniform as well. He had only 5.5 sacks, I think, in his NFL career. Started just four games in a 43-game NFL playing career that went only 3 years. just in and out of the league in no time. And I consider that. I mean, people are saying Mark Colombo. You could make an argument Colombo was a bad. He missed an entire season, his second year he missed. But he did go on elsewhere, unfortunately, with Dallas and have four or five semi-productive years. So he salvaged a career out of it. I look at the total package, not just what the Bears got out of him, but if a guy recovers and winds up finding a little bit of life after Chicago, I probably wouldn't put him as high on the board as I would some of these other guys like Stan Thomas and Michael Haynes. Curtis Enos was a good one too.
Well, what about Kevin White? The guy had 25 catches with no touchdowns as the seventh overall pick.
Yeah,
no touchdowns.
I mean, I know.
The only thing about Kevin White where I almost feel bad including him in the conversation is it is a direct result of injury. Like, he played 14 games his entire NFL career.
Yeah.
Picked in 2015. He's never been able to get on the field. I remember that draft thinking, man, like that Kevin White and Amari Cooper, that was a legitimate debate for who the top receiver was in that draft. Kevin White at West Virginia was awesome. Freak athlete, go up and get it, yards after the catch, could turn a 2-yard bubble screen into an 80-yard touchdown. All right. Kevin White was a reasonable selection where the Bears took him, and then he just has never been able to stay healthy.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, if the guy winds up out of football, that doesn't really change the equation. You still can put the label bust on the guy if you want to, and I think Kevin White is an excellent choice. Absolutely. That's a good one. See, that's the thing. I mean, when you've got five or six candidates for the win, we're only talking about a 25, 30-year history here. You got that many candidates for all-time bad. That doesn't speak well. I just think there probably are only a half a dozen cities where football fans don't feel this way, though.
Yeah, I agree. The vast majority feel this way. And the only distinction I'm making, it's not just to defend Kevin White. It's almost like that there's two separate conversations. Like, we don't really know if the football evaluation of Kevin White was wrong because we never got to see him play football. Whereas a guy like Shea McClellan, who 66 games in the NFL and he hasn't gotten to double-digit sacks yet. Like, we know that was a bad pick at 19th overall for defensive end. He's had every opportunity in the world to be productive, and he hasn't been. So while both are busts, I just think that there's busts, and then there's busts with the injury distinction for the player, where we don't really know if Kevin White would have had a clean bill of health if he would have ended up being a good player.
I would like to take issue with those texters, and it's not been a ton, but a few people have suggested the late Rashan Salaam.
He was productive.
Yeah, he was. I think he became the first Bear in franchise history to rush for 1,000 yards or more in his rookie season. He rushed for almost 1,100 yards. They drafted the Heisman Trophy winner first round in 95. He starts 11, plays in 16 games, and was a starter for only 6 games his second year. But yeah, very productive in his first season. Played in the league only 4 years, certainly not a prolific career, and it never got better after that first year when he rushed for almost 1,100. He was halved the following year. He was like Nate from the Dewey Cox story. I've been halved, and didn't find the end zone much either. 13 touchdowns in a 4-year NFL career for the late Rashan Salaam, great Tommy Williams name. What else did I? Cedric Benson also has been suggested, and Cedric Benson wasn't a good player for the Bears, but he had an NFL career, right? I mean,
yeah, he was the
in fact he ripped up
pick.
The Bears 11 years ago.
Yeah, the Cedric Benson, while not living up to his draft position, he's got more than 30 career NFL touchdowns.
All right. Cedric Benson,
multiple contracts, multiple teams. He just was way overdrafted given what we know about running back production. Right, to take a running back fourth overall, you have to be, you know, Zeke Elliott when it comes to production, and then you still are a little bit overpaid, but at least you're awesome, right? Cedric Benson underperformed and was picked as a fourth overall guy in the draft. So he didn't live up to his draft billing, but I don't think it's totally fair to label Cedric Benson a bust. Like, he's not in the same category as Kevin White or Michael Haynes.
No, not even close. No, I mean, for 3 years consecutively, he rushed for more than 1,000 yards. The Bengals got a decent ride out of Cedric Benson. He started 13 games there his first year, all 16 his second, and 15 in 2011, rushing for 1,251, 1,111, and 1,067 with 6-7 and 6 TDs rushing. So he had productive years for the Bengals. It just unfortunately, they chose wrong when they chose him over Thomas Jones.
You blew past my David Terrell. I thought he was going to be so damn good. That was a top 10 pick who had less than 10 touchdowns. 9 career touchdowns, 8th overall pick.
Yeah, I didn't mean to blow past it.
Let's take a look at him.
Yeah. Didn't they go back-to-back Michigan kids that same year, Anthony Thomas and David Terrell?
Yep.
I thought that was the case, yeah. And Terrell was the first-round pick. They wind up getting more out of Anthony Thomas, even though it was a flash in the pan. He had a real good rookie season. He rushed for more than 1,200 yards in his first year in the league. Didn't do much after that. Back in the pre-coronavirus era when I would have draft parties, unlike Yerk, my buddy Vandy was over, and he was so excited about David Terrell that he took the Michigan helmet off of the shelf on which it was resting opposite the Ohio State helmet on the rivalry wall, and he took out the earpieces in, and he stretched out, he wore it for about an hour, and then when the Bears drafted Anthony Thomas, he took it off and disgustedly kicked it to the corner of the room. I said, "What are you doing? I hate Anthony Thomas. So you're going to kick the damn helmet? Come on, you still got
to take
David
it out
Terrell.
Of the
Yeah. Kick the helmet to the corner."
Also, like, it speaks to how, sure, there is skill to this. I'm not dismissing that as a component of it, but luck and player development are such bigger components of it. Because, like, in 2000, the Bears' first two selections, Urlacher and Mike Brown. The next year, their first two selections, David Terrell and Anthony Thomas. So the same team, same organization, same brain trust can pick linchpin cornerstone guys of a defense for a decade and a half, and then the next year, David Terrell, Anthony Thomas. It's weak science, man. There's a ton of guesswork, and I think there's a really good chance for tonight that'll lead to a lot of variance and a lot of the people on TV being totally shocked, because how is there going to be a consensus among all of these NFL teams when none of them got to conduct individual workouts with these players? They didn't get to go to all of the pro days and talk and compare notes and all of that. Like, my guess is that the Bears board, the Lions board, the Packers board, the Vikings board, my guess is their boards are just going to be so different as opposed to normal years that I think there's going to be a lot of surprises tonight.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. There's going to be more guesswork done than in many, many years. Teams' medical departments have not had a chance to, following the combine, inspect the goods. And you'd love to do that, especially if you've got a guy coming off of an injury and or a surgery. You obviously want to take a look at him, but you've got to trust an outside contractor, an independent contractor, to be your medical eyes and trust that opinion. Lots of luck with that. We have not yet called this draft tonight or this weekend a virtual draft, have we?
No, because
it's not a virtual draft. They are drafting. There will be a draft tonight. What are the network? I think it might have been NFL Network promoting their coverage of the virtual draft. That's not a virtual draft. They're actually going to be picking players. All 32 teams are going to do it. They're not in the same room, but there's nothing virtual about this. Have you heard that used?
I have.
I've heard it several times. Like, what are you talking about? They did a virtual draft Monday when they feigned a draft to find out what technological glitches they had. That was the virtual draft.
This one
tonight's real. This is actual, the real thing, man. This counts. Nothing virtual about it.
They should consult you. the grammar, Richard, to whatever they think they're going to roll out a new phrase. Be like, no.
That's reckless. Come on, think about it before you put it on the graphic already. Our virtual draft coverage starts tonight at 6. No, it doesn't. They're drafting. Nothing virtual about it, kids.
They are very much drafting. Oh, kids, look at you. You Yurko again? You just got Yurko on the brain. Hey, come on, kid. Come over to the party.
Hey, what are you doing, Mackie? We'll wash it down with disinfectant.
Yeah. That's what you want to do. You want to take swigs of the disinfectant.
Vimo and the Dirty Dog are going to be there, kid. I got all my Cal City guys. And a shout-out to Gabe Karimi. Yes, indeed. Indeed he do. How could I forget him? Gabe Karimi's another bust out. I didn't think he had want to. He was undersized and didn't care about it. He was so... Spiegel and I talked to him at a golf outing, and it's like his second year, and I looked at him, and I was like, dude, this was before we started the interview. I said, you in the gym a lot this summer? He goes, not a ton. He goes, you know, I'm more into cardio. You're a tackle. What do you mean you're more into cardio? You're a tackle. Where's your ass? I said, I was hoping to find you with an ass this season. No ass. I don't think he had the want to, and that's why his career was so brief.
He should have again listened to you. We'd all be better off. Yeah, I was looking to see an ass on you, Karimi. No, I'm just getting my Peloton rides in.
Holy cow! Look at the butt on that guy.
Yeah, he must work out. We got a few details coming in on golf coming back to the state of Illinois. We can give those. Dave Wanstead at 4:30. And I got a theory. I'm running past you guys at 4 on the score.
I wanted to make sure I didn't miss the golf outing, and I didn't participate.
You love golf.
I hate it. Eddie, don't give me that.
Golf is coming back to Illinois. The golf, according to the new executive order from Governor J.B. Pritzker, will be included as part of the modifications. We have a modified stay-at-home order. The stay-at-home order extends now through the end of May, but state parks are going to begin to be phased in as a reopening under the guidance of the Department of Natural Resources. Fishing and boating in groups of no more than 2 people are going to be permitted. And a list of parks that will be allowed to open on May 1st are available at the Illinois.gov website. But golf courses also are going to be able to be removed from the banned list, but there will be strict safety guidelines. And according to our guy Teddy Greenstein, he spoke to a golf course operator who hears that only twosomes are going to be permitted at the beginning for golf in the state of Illinois. That's just one golf course operator, so we don't have all the details yet, but it's potentially that it'll just be twosomes, Mac, in Illinois.
Boy, that seems a little bit weird to me. I don't know. Maybe it's a cart availability thing. You're only letting 2 carts out per group, so you can only, you're not going to let people share carts, so maybe that might be something. There is an upside to that, though. With only 2 per group.
Pace of play.
Well, that and you weed out guys you don't enjoy playing with. The buddy of yours who's the 3rd or the 4th sometimes and takes forever, never sees you hit your tee shot. He's always fiddling with his phone back at the cart or messing with his one hitter or doing something. Hey, did you see where I went? I lost. No, man, I wasn't watching. I got a buddy who's never seen me hit a tee shot. I don't know how many rounds I play with. You could weed those guys out.
You could. The thing with golf is it definitely can be done safely. The vast majority of states have golf available. I think it was like 35 of 50 as of a week or 10 days ago or so. And obviously, we've got more cases here than the vast majority of states, and we've talked about this before. Give people an inch, they take a mile, so golf's open. Why can't I go play pickup basketball? Why can't I go to the lakefront? Like, you can't trust people to make responsible decisions, but I feel like if you say no carts, you got to walk, you got to practice social distancing, you put the thing on the flagstick that allows you to lift up the cup without touching the flagstick to get the ball out of the hole, which you've seen on some of these videos going around, and the clubhouse and restaurants are closed, so you got to pay online and book in advance. I feel like golf could be done.
golf is about as easy as it gets, I think, if you're smart about it. It shouldn't be that difficult of a proposition. That's why I'm a little bit surprised to hear they're only letting two out per group. Yeah, well, what the rules changes last year, and I noticed when I played, even though I didn't play as much as I typically do, last year maybe a dozen rounds or so, 15 rounds, that with the rule change where there people aren't taking the flag sticks out now, it's no longer a rule where you have to take the flag stick out when the ball is on the putting surface. Most people are adhering to that. I noticed most people last year putting without the stick in the cup. Now, I always kind of preferred it out, but, you know, if whoever is away decides he wants to take a whack at it, and the flag stick is still, I couldn't care less. I'll putt with it. It doesn't make any difference to me. I don't mind it.
Yeah, it helps if you're going to blow the ball past the cup to have the flag stick in. But yeah, I always would take it out also, just because that's what it was. Leave it in for chipping, take it out for putting. But I'm looking forward to getting back out there. It'll be good for the body, the mind, the soul. So I will be golfing at some point in the month of May.
Yeah, I'd take a razor to that mug of yours, especially if you're playing a country club. They may not let you in.
I don't play at country clubs. No one invites me to country clubs. I play the public courses, baby. I can look like whatever I want. I would love to play country clubs. I mean, I don't get invited to country
clubs. It's not your thing. It isn't.
It's too bougie for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But what is my thing, Mac, is spending way too much time thinking about football theories and just theories about life in general, proposing them to the mob, and then have Shep summarily dismiss it as Danny being Danny. I have an NFL draft one for you, boys. I think you will enjoy it. We'll see what the reception is. That's coming up, and then Dave Wanstead on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.